fireworks from Destin, which is just a wonderful statement, because it does seem like there's some outspoken football coaches and administrators down in Destin that are both a little bit fed up with Greg Sankey and really fed up with federal legislators that are not bailing them out of their own mess.
Boy, boy, oh boy. I have to sign off here. We could do a 24-hour marathon show on both of the on the second subject especially. But I do want to hit baseball though. But man, that
sure.
I'm fascinated because I do need someone to tell me why does Sankey feel the way he feels, and why does the Big Ten guy feel the way he feels? Because sometimes I think that they just agree to we don't want to disagree. But like, what are the core principles of what each are saying? We can get into that a little bit maybe. But let's go back to, has Georgia ever, do we know this? Have they ever won the regular season and the SEC tournament and hosted and been a national seed? Has that ever happened the same year? Or is this maybe outside the national championship, the greatest regular season at least in Georgia baseball history?
I mean, this is an easy answer. They had never won the SEC tournament, Mickey, in baseball.
How about that?
First. Or I at least saw a stat, like, I was born in 1989. You got to even go back that far to where they're, like, invested into it this way. Georgia's had really good baseball teams. They've made it to the final of the College World Series. I think it was 2007. They lost to Fresno State. And, you know, this happens in college baseball. You go up against the hot pitcher, and that can take you out. But that was Gordon Beckham and that era of Georgia baseball, which he'll actually be the color commentator for the game on Friday on SEC Network against Long Island, which a lot of people in Georgia are upset because Mercer did not make the NCAA postseason, and Long Island did. I don't think either have a chance to get to Omaha, so people can find their ways to be mad about what they want to. Overall, the thing about this Georgia team, Mickey, when they hired Wes Johnson, I think everyone thought, all right, based on what he did with Paul Skeens, based on what LSU's success was, that this was just going to be get really strong arms in here and Georgia just become a pitching monster. And they've done that some, but really, Georgia can just hit the cover off the ball. And it's as deep of a lineup as I've ever seen at Georgia. Daniel Jackson, Trey Phelps, that's probably where it starts. But it's a dangerous lineup the whole way around. And I would, you know, Georgia's had some disappointing regionals. You remember a couple of years ago when Florida State made their run, they came through Athens to do that.
Yeah.
And that Georgia team was really good. And Georgia, I think around COVID, when that season got canceled, had one of the better 1-2 punches in terms of pitchers in the country. Emerson Hancock was here, and now he's pitching with the Mariners. But this team, because of the way they can hit, it's going to take a special pitcher to shut down this lineup, and that totally can happen this time of year. But, yeah, I would say this is right there. If it's not the most successful regular season ever for Georgia baseball, it's right there at the top of it.
What has this run done to the fan base, the excitement level? What will the atmosphere be like? You know, now you've gotten this a couple of years, and you've hosted before, so you kind of gotten used to it. You kind of know what to do a little bit with this thing, the national number three seed now. What does that kind of momentum mean? What will it look like in Athens this weekend?
The funny thing is that I think having – you know, Memorial Day, and it was rainy all around the South, so people were inside, and then we're just kind of waiting for this game to happen. I think Georgia baseball got as strong of a spotlight as I can remember it, because people didn't have as much that they could be doing last weekend. And then also to win the final game of the SEC tournament the way that they did over Arkansas, run ruling in the seventh. Like, I think that's going to energize this fan base. And I suspect, look, this Georgia should cruise in this regional. It's not a very talented regional, but that super regional to me, Mississippi State, like they had a tough regular season matchup against them, and Georgia had to come back in Starkville to do that. That's the big thing with this team, though, Mickey, is the resilience that you see, because Georgia got down 6 runs to Florida in the SEC tournament and then came back to win that game. So it does seem like that they're not really out of anything. And then even if you branch out to the wider view of what athletics has been doing as a whole at Georgia, there's only 2 schools in America that have made the college football playoff, the softball postseason, baseball postseason, and both men and women's basketball tournaments, and it's Georgia and it's Alabama.
Yeah.
And so Josh Brooks is in pretty rare air right now.
He gets an awful lot of credit for that, for sure. My final question on baseball before we go down to Destin is, maybe I'm wrong on this, I think the Georgia Tech success and their offense – and the Georgia success and their offense, that's the nation's number 2 and number 3 deal here. I think that adds to the the storylines here. This is compelling to me because there's a chance you could see Georgia and Georgia Tech face each other in Omaha. I think there's a good chance of that. And I'm going to tell you, man, that would be an unbelievable story there because I think these are two of the, you know, obviously two of the top three teams in the country. Maybe two teams might have a chance to win a national championship. Boy, am I right by thinking that Georgia Tech and their dominance it adds to that Georgia story and the intrigue of maybe potentially facing each other in Omaha?
You ask about the intrigue of it. When those two teams played at Truist Park earlier this year, that was a hot ticket. Yeah. And a lot of Georgia Tech won that game, and you saw the talent on the field. There was a stat that came out of that about exit velocity, and it was like that game probably had more exit. I mean, and different paths, I get, but more exit velocity than a lot of MLB games.
Oh yeah, it was like 23 balls hit over 100 miles an hour in that game, and like the Braves had three that night.
Yeah. So it's a different scale with the bats. I always acknowledge that, but still. That tells you the quality of those lineups. And, yeah, I think that this season, look, Georgia baseball's always had a loyal fan base, and it's increased with what they've done under Wes Johnson. So I'm not discounting that. But the way that you phrase that question, I think it definitely applies to the intrigue at Georgia Tech. I mean, I was seeing online where their AD was trying to find ways to add more seats to their stadium, and they were trying to do that throughout the season as it was going, and some things weren't permitted, but they're going to do what they can. And yeah, I think that's really cool because imagine if you get into – if both of those teams get to Omaha and play each other, that's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody noticed it other than me, but just one other quick note before we get down to Destin. The Ryan Hibble story, or Hibble, the former Georgia player that won a national championship at Oklahoma. Oklahoma kind of lowballed him. Georgia didn't even call him at all, supposedly, and he's going to Georgia Tech to take over. I think we might have a little rivalry now in Georgia Tech golf as well.
Absolutely. And so my read on this, and I don't have the full story on it. I've been trying to get it because I'm as intrigued as you are by it. So Chris Hack steps down at Georgia, legendary coach. Georgia Tech's legendary coach also steps down, right? And so this is turnover that you haven't seen in 30 years in golf at the two top colleges in Georgia. And Oklahoma's coach played at Georgia. I think the thought was Georgia wasn't going to pay what he wanted to pay compared to what they could pay Mookie Moss, who's taking over, who was an current assistant. Hibble had been an assistant previously. And I don't think Georgia even really chatted with Hibble about it. Yeah. And that could have been that Chris Hack had selected that Mookie was going to be the next head coach and it was already solidified, so why would you chat with it? Like, I don't know the decision-making on there. But my read on this is that Hibble was pretty frustrated that he didn't get a look at that Georgia job, which would have been his dream job. Wife, and he and his wife are from Georgia. They wanted to come back here, and so when Tech comes open, he leaves Oklahoma for that. And it wasn't because of money, I promise you that, because Oklahoma was going to pay what they needed for him to stay. They just couldn't compete with the family ties.
Very interesting for sure. Hey, did you ever run when Josh Brewer was a women's coach over there at Georgia? You ever have any situations with him?
A little bit, mainly just when we had some students that would work in media, team side media for different UGA sports, and we'd had some that had done some things with women's golf.
I'm on him right now because he's at Eastern Michigan after getting fired at Georgia. Yeah. In his first year there, he's got two girls from California that don't go to school. Like, they're on online classes and they live in California, but they play for Eastern Michigan and they meet up with their teammates at tournaments. I'm like, man, this has got to be rock bottom for what we're doing now.
Anyway. I would tell you that tracks with the reputation that he left here with.
Oh, how interesting. And he's got a bunch of NIL money and he's taking a bunch of transfers, a bunch of foreign kids. Oh, how interesting then. Okay. I'm glad that tracks.
Not a team that operated like a team, if we put it that way.
Okay. Oh, so this is nothing new to him. Okay, good. Thank you for that validation. All right.
I mean, say it out loud, Mickey. If you're a successful golf coach, Georgia to Eastern Michigan, you know?
Very good point. All right. I used to love going to Destin. I would go to those meetings, and, man, what a beautiful place, and I had a great time at the SEC meetings. I only went like maybe 3 years total, but loved going down that way. And usually it was a kumbaya love fest, and there was nothing really major come out of it, maybe one or two stories. It seems to me like this is the epicenter of college athletics right now for the last few days, and it seemed like there's a bunch of news coming out of Destin for the first time in a while.
Yeah, I agree, and it feels like we're almost at a tipping point here for what college football will be becoming, and all the coaches and presidents seem to know this, because Jerry Moorhead, Georgia's president, has been more outspoken in the last two or three days than I've heard him about any of this in the last couple of years, and he's had a strong voice in this room as one of the presidents right there in the center of all athletics around the country. Kirby Smart, same thing. I mean, he's the longest tenured coach in the conference, and so he's kind of getting the governor's voice, if you will, of that room. But then even Mike Elko just admitting yesterday, if I could pick the number of playoff teams, like, for self-preservation, it'd be like 40.
Yeah.
Because I can't get fired if you throw 40 in there. Like, we're always going to be in it, which I actually thought that was some refreshing honesty, because what they're finally doing, and it's what you'd been lobbying for years, Mickey, is tell me what your motives are.
Yes.
Because if you do that, I can tell you, like, where this is going. And finally, they're saying, I want to keep my job and keep getting paid. That's my motive.
Yeah, and it's a great motive to have. And who would blame them for having it? But with that said, you can't. The part of the problem with the propaganda stuff and in line, you know, step in line stuff is that sometimes you have to say stuff that just is the dumbest thing ever. What I don't know is, like, why is the Big Ten, why are they so set on this number? Why have they been lobbying for this number? And then why is the SEC so set against it? Is that just the fact that they just want to disagree? Or are there actual true core principled values that each might have? I don't know the answer to that question. Because here's the thing. We Bill Hancock would come out forever saying, oh, we can't have a playoff. He was the BCS commissioner, by the way. Remember this? We can't have a playoff. The BCS works, and it's all about the regular season. And then when they go to playoff, they name Bill Hancock on the playoff committee, guys, and he's the commissioner of the playoffs. It's like, oh, well, of course we did a playoff. We got to have four. I mean, that's the only way to do this. We got to have four, and then you get to 12. Like, well, everybody knows you had to get 12. Like, wait a minute, man. Like, there's no consistency. And this feels like politics to me. That I'm going to change day to day, and I'm going to try to convince you this is the way I've always felt. But the fact is, history will, like, we have noted, documented statements that you made in the past that are contradicting everything you're saying right now.
With the Big Ten and SEC, I spent 4 hours in the car with my kids this weekend coming back and forth from Alabama to my in-laws' house. And in the way back of the van, we have the 8-year-old and the 5-year-old.
Yeah.
And especially from the 5-year-old's perspective, if it's her idea, it's a good idea. And if it's the 8-year-old's idea, it's not a good idea.
Right.
Even if it's the idea that she wanted, it's just where the idea came from.
Right.
And to me, that's where we're at with Big Ten SEC. That it's not what's right and what's wrong. It's who gets to have the power play that's guiding where this is going. You know, it's very political in that sense. And, you know, in terms of contradiction, locally for Georgia, you know, Kirby Smart had been asked yesterday. Georgia and Clemson just canceled a home-and-home series that they had scheduled. We've seen this a lot. Have done the same. Previously, Georgia did this with Oregon. Ohio State's going to be in the same boat. And they keep throwing these little dumb neutral site games out. Because why wouldn't Georgia and Clemson play in Nashville or Orlando? You know? Who wants that? Whatever. I'm frustrated with neutral site games because, like, college football should be played on a college campus. I think that's and Georgia has been at the worst part of this because of Georgia-Florida forever, and I think that should go on campus too, and I've long said that. And for the first 5 years of Kirby Smart being at Georgia, he was on the same page of, yeah, give me the extra home game because I can recruit in a different way that I can't do with these neutral sites. And then he was asked about it in Destin this week. He says, fans love neutral site games, and so I don't really care where it's played. And I'm like, I don't think that's true. I think you're saying that because you have to, because the athletic director says that's how we're going to make more money this way to build a roster. I don't like any of that.
No. I don't like the, first of all, having to sell games just for NIL. We got to pay football players more money so you can take games away from the fans of the home fans. You know, so many people don't get to go to road games or neutral site games. And by the way, why would Clemson and Georgia, 75 miles apart, ever go to Dallas, Texas to play a football game against each other? Like, that makes no sense at all. Like,
play in Pacoa.
Right. It makes more sense to play over at the Granite Bowl in Elberton, you know, than it is to go to Dallas, Texas to play a football game. Like, that makes no sense.
They should legitimately do a scrimmage there and just see how many people they can pack around the Granite Bowl.
Have you been to Granite Bowl before?
I've not. I've heard stories, but like I can picture what it is based on every other stadium I've been to.
Except for this. For one thing you might not know. So Elberton is the granite capital of the world, supposedly, or at least North America. And they dug this, the stands are actually granite. and they dug this thing out of this granite, and it's a granite bowl, except on the visiting side, the county lockup's right there. So you got this barbed wire, razor wire right up against the hot dog stand. I'm serious, man. It's the most intimidating place ever because the county lockup's right there, the pokey. And, man, it's right there on the visiting side. Like, I think I'm going to sit on the home side this day, you know?
Man, you know somebody has had some belligerent behavior and just ended up right beside the stadium.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They ought to let the inmates out, like, just to go watch the game and then bring them right back into the yard or whatever. Anyway, the yard's right there.
There's a chance that that group of inmates is a pretty good team.
It would be the longest yard.
Yeah.
You just play it right
there.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, tell me about UGASports.com, what all's coming up, and a great time to follow with some great stuff from Kirby and the president and an awful lot of big news coming out of Destin.
Yeah, I asked Jim Donnan yesterday on our podcast just about when Georgia baseball has a run like this, what that does for football. I liked his answer just from the perspective of, you know, he's been a football coach when other sports at Georgia were super successful and how there is cohesion with that. Also ask him just specifically about Georgia's cornerbacks, and we can talk about this in future weeks because we have a lot of Wednesdays to fill. But Ellis Robinson in particular, I think, is a difference maker for Georgia moving forward.
Short break. We'll come back, but I can't thank you enough. UGASports.com, Dane Young. Have a great one, my friend, and we'll talk to you next week. Tell the girls hello.
Thanks, Mickey. See you.
All right, you too. All right, we'll come back with Andrew Oliphant. We're going to talk some PGA. So stinking good. I told you I found the bunny bread over there. That's the best white bread I've had in recent years, so that's all good now. Go by the bakery side of things. That's great. Pharmacy side of things. That's great. You got the butcher and the seafood section back there. That's great. Just make it convenient on you. Get your gas right there. Get you filled up with your Starbucks right there. You got to get caffeinated. They'll do it all for you. Wide aisles. Cut through the middle section of the frozen section rather than going all the way around. I love it. Low prices. Love the savings. Love our great friends over at Ingles. And we'll be Ingles for sure right down the road. Let me get Andrew Oliphant, Direct Construction at Katichi. Good morning, Andy O. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Good morning to you, Mickey.
We talked a little bit about Georgia Tech hiring Oklahoma's national championship winning coach in golf. With that said, what's your thought about a golf coach's role at the college level? How involved? How swing involved? You've been around a bunch of them, been around a bunch of great players that went on from junior golf to college golf. What's the difference in a great one and a mediocre one? And how involved should they be? And I guess that's dependent on a lot of factors in there.
I think with a college coach, he's saying the right thing at the right time and getting his players or her players motivated. You know, they might not be the best players, but they could be the best team. And I think that's what a great coach would actually do. You know, that they, you know, the player, we know, right? We play golf and it's the 6 inches inside your brain that the players lose confidence. You know, they might not have things clicking and just having that coach that inspires them and gives them that little bit of edge, that's what makes a great coach.
But swing wise, you see so many people still have their swing coaches. You being a guy that does work on the swing and a part of it game, would you consult with college coaches? Is that something that you want to have and like what rules you can have where you can work with students on your campus or their campus? There's a lot in there as far as relationships you have too, right?
There are some rules there with the NCAAs and you know, how much time a student, when they can spend time with a, you know, perhaps you call it an outside coach or a personal coach. I think a lot of the college coaches don't get too involved in swing. You know, they respect that they've recruited a player coming through high school and being a great player. And you know, they've got there for a reason, right? You know, what they're doing is the right way. And they're not, a college coach certainly isn't going to start breaking down a golf swing and rebuilding it. You know, they're there to guide the player. And then as a swing coach, you know, certainly with good players, they're capable of making a change. You know, so, and I see it all the time now that you can be with a player at 9 o'clock in the morning and they might have something with their golf swing, and by 5 o'clock that afternoon they've made a change. You know, so the talent level is incredible, but you know, working with good players and collegiate players and maybe players that are aspiring to to turn professional, a coach has to get it right. They have to make sure that what they're preaching and telling the player is the right medicine to get them better. You know, you can't just sort of experiment, if you like. You can't just go out on a whim and say, oh, well, try this, try that. You know, it's got to be the right information for the player.
All right, I want to switch gears. Blades Brown just recently turned 19 years old. He gets his special status on the PGA Tour. Let me talk first about golf swing. I don't know how familiar you are with it. He's got a little bit of a Spieth in there, a little bit of a chicken wing, a little bit of a pull with that left side maybe. You familiar with what Blades Brown does with the golf club?
Yeah, again, you know, incredible player, right? I mean, 19 and he's playing on the PGA Tour. And when he speaks to the media, it's like he's been, he seems comfortable. You know, it's like he's taking it in his stride. And, you know, it's like, oh, the young Blades Brown would do it. It's like, shoot, he's only 19.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's still crazy, crazy young. And, you know, there might be a little fear of burnout there at 19 joining the tour. We've seen it a little bit before, where, you know, these young players, it's still a, you know, it's become younger, hasn't it? I mean, we're seeing Siwoo Kim and these players are in the early 20s. But, you know, hopefully he can manage the travel, the hotel booking, you know, all this kind of, even, you know, might not even be able to rent a car at certain places. So we have to rely on the tour sending a driver for him. But, you know, they have all that taken care of. But he's certainly a very mature young man and swings it great. You know, like you say, he's got a little bit of a hold in there. He's not, he doesn't seem like a big, big player in terms of build. You know, he's kind of slightly built, but we'll have to wait and see. You know, he might still be growing at 19.
Yeah, we'll see what that looks like. Now, he's got an interesting decision to make because he was playing well in the Korn Ferry Tour. And they got the 25 spots available for him there, but he gets a special status exemption on the PGA Tour with his 14th place finish this past week. He had to finish the top 21. He finished 14th, shot 67 the last day to do that. But now more status on the PGA Tour, but that might not lead to the long term. So it would be pretty disciplined of him if he played more Korn Ferry Tours to get the longer term deal in there. What advice would you give him about what tours to play, how often to play? Can he play both? And there's obviously avenues for both. What would you say to Blades Brown's people about maybe being smart about what tours he plays, you know, for the rest of the year?
Yeah, and they've obviously looked at the schedule and mapped that out, how it looks to them. You know, if he's playing a PGA Tour event and he finishes in the top 20 and he's, you know, he's then eligible for the following week, that's a tricky one, isn't it? Because all of a sudden it's like, well, I was going to that part of the world with a Korn Ferry event, now I'm going to go here. And that, again, falls into all that travel and commitment there and change of plans. So they'll have all that mapped out. I think I would try and lean on the PGA Tour as much as possible. You know, if I was in his shoes and earn the tour card, you know, that way, you know, get himself the money pots bigger. You know, the tournaments are obviously bigger. The Korn Ferry guys, the courses are, I don't want to say easier, but typically they're a little bit more wide open, that, you know, they can smash it off the tee. The pins net don't tend to be as tucked in the sides of the greens as some of the PGA Tour golf courses, so that they run a little bit slower on the Korn Ferry than they do on the PGA Tour. But if I was a Blades Brown, you know, part of that team room saying, what do we do? I'd be trying to cherry pick the courses that I know he's going to play well on or have a good chance of, you know, getting some points, making some money and getting his PGA Tour card.
All right, leads me to my final question. I want to get to this a little bit, our final segment here, lead to this a little bit. With junior golfers, got a lot of parents listening right now. Let's go by ages a little bit. I'll throw a couple of ages out to you, and you tell me where we need to be, what we need to be thinking about and talking about. And let's go just total beginner for a, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old kid, never touched one before, just want to get into it, or just the early stages of just trying to make contact and getting the game out there. What do I need to do at that early age, that very beginner age?
find a group of young players that they're, you know, similar age, or they go to school together, or they're family members, you know, so at least there's 2, 3, 4 of them, and just have them at the range hitting golf balls or on the putting green. The attention span drops off very quickly, so the task needs to be 5-10 minutes, and then almost, you know, if we're putting for 5-10 minutes and then switch to range for 5 or 10 minutes, then go back to putting, or you've got to mix it up all the time.
All right. What age do I need to get a little bit of more technical? Let's start talking about ball position. Let's start talking about, you know, well, grip maybe a little earlier than that. But what age do I need to start thinking about maybe getting some, you know, tips and some advice to get a little more technical?
Well, I think that would certainly come with that young age too. You know, I mean, it depends on that individual. I've seen some 7-year-olds that almost, you know, they want it, right? That's what they're visiting and going to see a coach for. So if it's a structured coaching program that child is going into, then there should be a little bit of grip, a little bit of posture, a little bit of ball position, you know, a little bit of alignment, how far away from the ball I'm standing, the understanding of hitting up on a driver, hitting down on a wedge, you know, that should be instilled in that early, you know, even if it's 5, 6 years old, but it would be drip fed, you know, it would be like, okay, today we're hitting driver, we're going to hit up on it, let's go, you know, for 5 minutes, that's what they're doing, you know, and then it slowly transitions as the child gets a little bit older, you know, maybe 9, 10, 11, and, you know, you start to spend a little bit more time on things. You start to, you know, ingrain it a little bit more.
And final one, at what age or what level are we talking about where let's go ahead and compete a little bit and let's try to play in some tournament golf?
Well, again, I would say as early as that 5, 6 years old, you know, I mean, U.S. kids do a great job of their tournaments. They play forward tees, they play 9 holes. They have parents that are allowed to caddy, you know, so that they've got help with their golf bag and so on. So it's all down to the individual. I always say that for a junior player, they've got to want to enjoy the competition side. You know, it's that they've got to want to be out there and compete, get nervous. You know, it's okay to feel nervous, get the butterflies in the tummy going. And at the end of the day, that's what they're signing up for. Now, if they don't like it, then, you know, you kind of rewind it a little bit and bring them back to the range, get them with their friends. But if they enjoy that competition, again, I've probably answered the question with the same answer, right? You know, it's like start at 5, 6, but regulate it, get it associated for them. You know, it's like when Tiger Woods started his junior career, you know, dad would have him play forward tee, you know, he'd change the par, you know, instead of a par 5, it would be a 6 or a 7, might be an okay score. You know, as he gets older and hitting it further, then, you know, the 5 or 6 is a score, and then eventually as he's hitting it farther, he's trying to make 4 on the same hole.
Tell me about what you're doing. A great time of year. And by the way, when it's raining, we can go indoors. You know, Mother Nature doesn't hold back. Andrew Oliphant, the instruction everybody could teach you at this point in time. How can they reach you? What all's going on?
Yeah, we got a few rainstorms. Certainly yesterday, I had a busy day with some. It was National Ladies Day yesterday, so we had a good turnout with all of that. And I think they've now got it for about 4 days. So all the ladies out there looking to start golf, you can kind of go online and find a location that will help you with the golf, Women's Golf Week. I'm just starting to get the junior camps put together. I know it's a little bit late. You know, people may have things signed up, but, you know, as the kids finish school and get home, the parents will be looking for something to do. And so we're getting the junior camp started up in mid to late June time, so that the openings are still available for all that. And as always, you know, aim points ongoing. You know, so each month we do an aim point class and get people signed up, and you know, everybody that's done aim point, you know, they go into it with a little bit of skepticism. You know, I've seen it on television, don't quite know how it works, but once they do it, they love it. So We've got that too.
Yeah, do that. Get those juniors out. Let's take care of some junior golf this summer for sure. Be a great way to spend the summer. Andrew at Katichi.com. Always appreciate it, buddy. Let's do a little U.S. Open previewing when we talk next week.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Thanks again, Mickey.
All right, it is well. Andrew Oliphant. My great friends, Patterson's Tax Service, PATTX.com, PATTX.com, 864-859-8289. The Patterson's Tax Service right now, what are they doing in the summer? Somebody's about to get helped. But think about it like this. Like, even more rain today. So, get with them all dry. I hope you don't have any kind of water damage at the home right now, at your business right now. If you do, let's get this thing taken care of. Let's call these good folks, local rapid response. It's my great friends at All Dry, myalldry.com, 864-863-1234. Great people, honest as the day is long, local company, local rapid response, your water and mold experts. If it's in front of you right now with all the rain, all the stuff, I hope it's not in your home or in your business, but if it is, I got a great remedy for you. It's my great friends there at myalldry.com. Sean in Simpsonville said international games may be next. It might be next, like NC State and Virginia playing in Rio this year. Clemson was offered that gig, and they turned it down. But they did it. NC State and Virginia are going to Rio to play a football game this year because of NIL.
What?
Yes.
Okay, look, would I complain about a trip to Rio? No. Do I think it makes any sense that Virginia and NC Clemson, State are going that many miles south? No.
Clemson did not come close to doing this, but they were offered the gig, and they turned the gig down. But it's all about NIL. I remember Auburn sold a home game to Atlanta because of NIL. We got all these basketball tournaments now. It's like, oh, NIL.
Mm. Now, some of these basketball tournaments I think are fun that have been there for years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
But it does feel like they've exponentially increased in the last few years.
Sprinter112 says, Mickey, I smoked 6 full racks of ribs from Ingles this past weekend. They were on sale. Also bought 2 tubs of Bluebell ice cream. They're on sale too. Try the cookie two-step. Or my favorite, the Millennium Crunch.
Mm.
So good. Talk to me.
I need to hear about this cookie two-step.
Cookie two-step?
I need to hear about this cookie two-step. That sounds like something I could mess around with.
I know I told you this. Isla, our song is How About Them Cowgirls from George Strait. And she asked me the other day, we're out barbecuing in the backyard. And she said, Dad, can we play that song and do our dance? Oh, man. Oh, man.
Sweet girl.
While I get with Chad, let me send you the 2 videos from Isla yesterday.
So excited.
How about them characters? Speaking of girl dad, well, single game season, Chad and Columbia's a girl dad. Good morning, buddy. How you doing?
Great, mate. Last day of school. Hey, 2 things. So yesterday I listened to Backich, and Mick, I've never been more confident he's the dude. So for him to call in and you not have to get him, one and done in the tournament, I thought, most coaches would, just kind of like, not avoid it or hide, but, Mick, for him to just proactively do that and then for him to basically be like, yep, we've worked out the NIL and, it came across like we're going to be better funded moving forward from baseball standpoint. Like, dude, that just made me feel really good about it, just long term.
If you want to feel better about it, remind me to text you after the show because
– oh, well.
I'll forward to you. I won't forward everybody. I'll forward to you the text that he sent me after the interview was over, and you'll run through a brick wall. Anyway,
all right. Second thing, Nick. So your boy Milt Louder might get mad at me for this because he's the best segment on the radio. But like, and it's kind of like what Andrew was talking about with kids golf, right? Like, I hear you talk about we got coaches pitch tonight, and so I just think about my own self, Nick. Right? Like I played JV baseball, played football all through middle school and high school, varsity and all that. And I just, I got into golf very late. Like, my junior year of high school, I got into it. And so, I got pretty good enough to where I could play 2 years in college, right? And in college, I was probably a 4. And then after college, I got down to, like, almost scratch, right? It depending on the course. But, yeah, it was, like, my handicap was scratch. Anyways, the point of that is, Mick, I always thought to myself, like, if I would have started earlier – if all that time I was playing first base growing up and watching my right fielder let one go through his legs to the fence, if I would have been hitting balls or putting or chipping, think about how much better I could have been at golf or riding the bus to Chapin to play JV football if I was at the range, right? And so when I think about you and Drake, like, do you think about that? Because think about it, man. Like, if your kid grows up playing golf, when he's 25 and on a guys trip, he's the best golfer in the group. I mean, he's going to be able to tell his buddies, no matter what y'all ever do, you'll never beat me. When he's 35, he can tell him that. When he's 45, he can tell him that. When he's 75, he can tell him that. You know, like, you've never beat me in your whole life. And I just think that would be awesome. And then you add in the whole business factor out of it. Like, I mean, how many guys do you know that are playing church league softball still? You know, like, what good does it be to be a great second baseman when you're in the fourth grade? I know it's fun. I know it's great being on a team. I know you don't want to just push your kids. But do you ever regret, Mick? I know you were a big sports guy growing up. Like, all the time you spent playing other sports, if you just would have focused on golf. Let me get your thoughts on that.
It's interesting. It's a very interesting concept. Nothing better than Chad throwing something out there and then switching the gears really quickly. No, we couldn't afford to play golf. That's one thing about golf is we're doing a better job now making it more accessible. But like growing up, we couldn't join a golf club. I remember my dad would take me about twice a year to play, but like we didn't have access to it. Now my uncles were golf professionals, so we would go visit them at their courses and play for free. But that's one thing that we've got to do a better job of making golf more accessible, and getting more kids able to do it. But the main thing with our kids, and this is to my wife, who again she has 4 degrees. She has more degrees than the thermometer, man. Like, I yield to her on this, and her big thing is we are going to give our kids access. And so with Drake right now, he not only, like, he's going to football camp today and baseball camp later this summer, but we're going to the beach and the mountains, and so he's doing piano camp. He just had a piano recital, and so he's doing these reading things and reading stuff all summer, and he played, you know, baseball and flag football, and we're fishing and we're playing golf. Just give him access and let him decide what he wants. But, if your kid likes golf and likes tennis or likes some stuff, yeah, that's all that's great too. But being part of a team, there is something to be said for the team thing too. Now, we'll say this. I was very, very fortunate from the time I was 8 years old and all the sports I had that my teams just won. And so we won championships 4 out of 5 years in Dixie's baseball. And my football teams won championships. And we won all the time. And so I'm jaded by that. What if we lost all the time? Like, would I still feel the same way I feel about sports? So my views are completely biased because it was fun and we won. We would do years in baseball. We'd play 20 games a year. So I played 100 Dixie Youth baseball games. I'm telling you, we went about 92-8 or something. And we won championships in 4 out of 5 years. There was one year I cried my eyes out because we had a chance to go 20-0. But my coach, rightfully, we were playing the one great team, one bad team. We had one great pitcher and one, you know, really good pitcher. Well, we pitched our great pitcher against the bad team to make sure that we won the championship. But we lost the next last game of the season as a result. So we only went 19-1. I remember crying my eyes out with the one loss. So my point there is, if I wasn't that lucky to be on those teams, like, would I still feel that way about team sports? But it's like, we just won all the time. Did your teams win, Ashby, growing up? Like, you played on teams.
Oh, yeah.
Soccer and basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Would you feel differently if y'all didn't win? I don't know what it felt like to lose those games.
Maybe. I've always been competitive, so I don't know that it would have been different for me personally, but I'm not sure.
Did your team – you play team sports, Kenna?
Yeah, I played basketball and football.
Did y'all win?
I feel like all the teams that I got put on were no good.
So, see, you might have a different perspective. So, now, do you look back, like, was it a value or not a value? Would it have been more valuable had y'all won more?
I think the value is just being able to play sports and having the ability to play. Yeah. I mean, even though we didn't win championships or stuff like that, I still found it a vital part in my childhood.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I think the character building and all that kind of stuff isn't really affected by winning or losing.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I didn't lose.
Have you seen that? Remember when Kanye went up to the Grammys and said people were really scared about what I was going to say if I didn't win? I guess we'll never know. That's you.
One of my favorite quotes ever. Brad Hughes might not approve of this, but this is my Brad Hughes thought of the day here. Brad Hughes at Allstate.com, BradHughesInsurance.com. Better coverage, better rates. Thanks to Brad Hughes and the Allstate Insurance Agency. Get in touch with him. Brad Hughes does a great job of combining my auto owners and all. George Best is one of the greatest soccer players of all time. He played for Manchester United. I'm going to clean this up a little bit. But he said, I'm often asked, what would I choose between having a relationship with Miss World and the most beautiful woman in the world, and he was dating Miss World at the time, whatever, Miss Universe, or shaking off four defenders and scoring from 30 yards out at Anfield, his arch rival of Liverpool. And he goes, fortunately for me, I've done both. I didn't have to choose. Isn't that great?
Legend.
Quickly, skip the music. 2 minute Joe. We got 1 minute. Ashby.
Just watched some great Isla Plyler videos. Need to be discussed tomorrow.
Oh, let's do that for sure. Kiana.
Looking to settle down with an NBA team. Either the Knicks or the Celtics. I don't know.
I thought you were Lakers.
You can't say you can't do the Knicks right now.
Huh?
You cannot go Knicks right now.
Well, no. This was before the choices? They had a great season.
Who are the choices?
The Knicks or the Celtics.
Never choose Boston.
What?
Never. Boston is a disgusting, awful city. Don't choose Boston.
Really?
No, yeah. You need
to tell me more.
We'll do it.
You need to go with like a rebuilding team.
Yeah, I agree
with that. Suns?
Get on the bottom floor, buddy. Yeah. Get on the bottom floor.
I see what you mean.
Eric Newton, for all real estate needs, EricNewton.com. Get in touch with him. Certainly help you out. EricNewton.com, the very best in the business. Hey, if you need any real estate question in Clemson, if anything ever comes up in Clemson, what are you thinking about maybe investing some properties in Clemson? Let's talk about it. Let's talk to Eric Newton, EricNewton.com. Let me thank Dane Young, Andrew Oliphant. Tomorrow's show, Paul Strelo, Ashby, great job. Kiana, great job. Up next, Faxon and Sam, have a great day. Most importantly, tune in tomorrow. That's what we'll see it right here on the radio. WC.